As Iyanla Van Zandt once said, it's important that we share our experiences with other people. Your story will heal you, and your story will heal somebody else. At Project Sleep, we believe that your stories matter, which is why we train people with sleep disorders on how to share their stories through our Rising Voices program. This Rising Voices podcast series features a variety of firsthand stories from people living with sleep disorders around the world. Each person's story offers unique and important insights.
Welcome to Project Sleep's podcast. Project Sleep is a 501c3 nonprofit organization dedicated to raising awareness and advocating for sleep health, sleep equity, and sleep disorders. I'm your host, Julie Flygar. We're so glad you're here as we work together towards making sleep cool. On this podcast, all guests express their own opinions. While medical diagnoses and treatment options are discussed for educational purposes, this information should not be taken as medical advice. Each person's experience is so unique, which is why it's so important to always consult your own medical team when making decisions about your own health. If you haven't done so yet, please hit the subscribe button so you never miss a Project Sleep podcast episode. And if you enjoy this podcast, please leave us a rating or review wherever you listen so that we can reach more listeners and raise more awareness. Hello, everybody. We have a very special guest with us tonight. Ming Lei lives in Nevada and is a registered nurse, permaculturist, and a council member and co-office manager for an anti-nuclear weapons interfaith peace nonprofit. He has lived with narcolepsy for the past 30 years. And now, as a Rising Voices of Narcolepsy writer, he hopes to spread awareness and share his story. Please go ahead and take it away, Ming.
With Intention, How Narcolepsy Led Me to Become an Activist. This was written with the intention to be published in the Desert Voices, the newsletter of Nevada Desert Experience. This is an interfaith, anti-nuclear peace organization organizing resistance to the Nevada test site, now named the Nevada National Security Site. Nevada Desert Experience is organized by a national council, and I serve on the as the president of this council. This article shines a spotlight on what shaped my life as an activist, narcolepsy. Life before narcolepsy. Growing up in Berkeley, California, I always wanted to be a cool dad. I also had aspirations to be a helper, a dentist, an architect, or a successful artist. I was a successful Boy Scout, but a fair high school student. I enjoyed camping, hiking, drawing, and woodworking. Symptoms began. I was sleepy in school and always tired. I was struggling. I had unexplained muscle aches, fatigue, and many automatic behaviors. Once I was so sleepy, I fell down an escalator. I tumbled down on the moving platform, and I remember vividly the toothy edge of each moving oncoming step towards me as I lay immobilized. Another time, I was robbed while I was riding public transit. Because I was narcoleptically sleeping, I was unable to move and respond to the threat and subsequently lost my stuff. Showers are also dangerous. I've stepped into a few and then woke up multiple hours later in a cold tub of water. Each time, I somehow managed to turn off the flow of water, but was not alert enough to step out of the tub. I thought I was a victim with a victim's life. I was isolated, depressed, and missing about a third of my high school classes because of tiredness. Sometimes I could just not get out of the shower in the morning to go to school. I applied for disability accommodations while in college. Road to diagnosis. While in college, I sought treatment as the sleepiness was uncontrollable. Low-income healthcare is an incredibly slow process. Still, I felt I was taken seriously by the medical profession and I had some trust in the system. I always knew that something was wrong. My mother had rheumatoid arthritis and a hoarding disorder. Life was never normal. We were always poor, struggling. 3 years passed between seeking treatment and receiving a narcolepsy diagnosis. I was 22 years old and I was surprised. I'd never heard of narcolepsy. Narcolepsy is a chronic neurologic disorder that impairs the brain's ability to regulate the sleep-wake cycle. It affects 1 in 2,000 people, 200,000 Americans, and 3 million people worldwide. Symptoms vary by person but may include excessive daytime sleepiness, periods of extreme sleepiness during the day that feel comparable to how someone without narcolepsy would feel after staying awake for 48 to 72 hours. Cataplexy, striking sudden episodes of muscle weakness, usually triggered by strong emotions such as laughter, surprise, or anger. Severity can range from jaw slackening or knee buckling to falling down. It can last a few seconds to several minutes, all while the person remains fully conscious. Hypnagogic and hypnopompic hallucinations. Visual, auditory, or tactile hallucinations upon falling asleep or waking up. These can be frightening and confusing. Sleep paralysis. The inability to move for a few seconds or minutes upon falling asleep or waking up, often accompanied by hypnagogic or hypnopompic hallucinations. Disrupted nighttime sleep. Unlike public perceptions, people with narcolepsy do not sleep all the time. Timing of sleepiness is off with narcolepsy, so one may feel quite sleepiness during the day but struggle to sleep at night. Automatic behavior. The continuation of a routine activity with little conscious awareness and often without memory of it. In these times when I woke up in a cold tub of water, it was an experience of automatic behavior that led me to turn off the faucet. Narcolepsy comes in two forms, narcolepsy with cataplexy and narcolepsy without cataplexy. I have a diagnosis of narcolepsy without cataplexy. Recent research suggests that narcolepsy with cataplexy is caused by a lack of hypocretin, a key neurotransmitter that helps regulate the sleep-wake cycle. Less is known about narcolepsy without cataplexy. Diagnosis typically relies on a 24-hour sleep study that includes a nighttime portion, polysomnogram, and daytime nap portion, multiple sleep latency test. Over the years, I've had a few of these tests to confirm my diagnosis. Life with narcolepsy. I have had periodic, episodic, helpful medical treatment tactics. I trust medicine, but strongly advocate for self-direction and personal self-care to promote safety and effectiveness. Becoming a registered nurse has been part of my narcolepsy journey. I've always been concerned about having enough energy. I lived with not much medication while I was living on an intentional community with few responsibilities. I filled in chores while I was able. When I was bicycling from Sacramento, California to Glacier National Park, I found pouring icy cold water on my forearms to refresh myself helped a lot. It was a slow bicycle trip, taking 3 months to complete and only ending because of snow. I felt a great sense of accomplishment as I was bicycling from the Sacramento Valley to up and over the Continental Divide, an accomplishment I felt acknowledgeable of as a climate activist. I was in awe of seeing the last glacier one could see from the road while bicycling through Glacier Park. Each day I looked up at the rugged mountains of both sunrise and sunset and felt so strong in what it took to reach these beautiful places. Currently, I've been recommended to consolidate sleep to 6 hours and avoid naps. I am conscious of my capacity limit. I have a schedule of responsibilities to do what I can when I want to take care of them. I would like to wean myself from stimulants as well as getting better nighttime sleep and less vivid, disturbing dreams. I am now connected through activism. In October 2012, I wrote a zine, With Intention, a zine about narcolepsy. At the time, there was only one book about narcolepsy from a personal perspective and no other recounting that I could find. I made multiple life adjustments and transitions, creating a radical shift from the acquisition-oriented society to a paradigm of permaculture. This includes using less sharing resources and practicing cooperation and mutual support. My narcolepsy symptoms have given me an awareness of the preciousness of energy and resources that has enforced a conservation-mindedness leading to environmental, peace, and climate justice activism. I wish friends would respond with care and respect, not humor, excessive concern, or dismissal. I felt uncomfortable when a friend responded with, "poor brave Ming," while attempting to genuinely show care towards me. Looking towards the future, I've learned a lot that I wish to convey to my child, who also received a diagnosis of narcolepsy. The reason I wish to share my experiences in, with intention, a zine about a person with narcolepsy is so that my child with narcolepsy has more resources than I had. I hope I'm the cool dad I always wanted to be. My living with narcolepsy has shown me the cavalier usage of energy and resources that our society perpetuates as a lifestyle. and that we as a society utilize too much and too many resources. I have learned that friends are the best medicine. The challenges and triumphs of my life with narcolepsy have shown me the way to live lighter on the land in better alignment with nature. I'm a retired RN, an activist, and an organizer of an anti-nuclear weapons peace group that is the biggest such group in the state of Nevada. I'm a permaculturist and climate activist. I wish to share my experiences and spread my narcolepsy zine about self-empowerment to inspire you to take action now, to not wait for doctors to find cures and treatments, but to seize life and live vibrantly. I want to activate you.
Great job. Thank you so much for sharing. You know, obviously we've gone through this together a few times and it still, you know, really grabs my heart, especially at the end. I love that part. Seize life and live vibrantly. And to take action now and not wait for doctors to find cures and treatments. I think that's just so beautifully said, Ming.
Thank you.
Are you facing sleep issues or a sleep disorder? Project Sleep is now excited to have the Sleep Helpline, a nonprofit-led free national helpline providing personalized support and resources. You can reach out today to speak with a compassionate resource specialist who will listen and help provide accurate sleep disorders information, resources to help navigate daily living and the healthcare landscape, and connect you with a certified sleep center and patient support organizations. Contact the Sleep Helpline at 1-800-819-2043 or by filling out a form on our website at project-sleep.com.
So you mentioned the zine, and I think it's, you know, so cool that you put that out in October of 2012. So I actually published my book in December of 2012. So it was the same year that we both got our series out there, which is so cool. And I was hoping, let's see, I think I'll go ahead and stop share here so we can see you bigger. And then I was hoping that, would you be willing to share a short passage from your zine?
So talking about automatic behavior, I'll read this section here. There have been a number of times when I've woken up and I'm finding myself walking outside the house with a cup of coffee in my hand with coffee in it. I should say ceramic coffee cup. And I have no idea how I got there or where the cup came from. Yet I know I did not make the coffee and the ceramic cup is not mine. And I have no clue as to where to return the coffee cup, to return the coffee shop or cafe I am sure it must have originated from. That repeated experience would be in and of itself crazy inducing. And that's the definition of automatic behavior there. And that's not within societal norms of sane.
Very powerful. And where can people find such zines?
So I have this on Etsy. There's a link that we're posting. And it's free to anybody who has narcolepsy. As I said, I wrote this when I had no other, when there's like one other book that was very old about narcolepsy from a personal perspective. And it was just before you published your book. And I was inspired by that aspect to turn it into writing because I was really wanting to get personal stories out there. And yeah, I was really appreciating your book.
Thank you.
Thank you at the first narcolepsy conference that you had been.
That's really
kind. I also have a second zine, which is about the narcolepsy conferences.
Really?
Yeah, this one highlights the narcolepsy conference that happened in Las Vegas and the one that happened in Cleveland the next year.
Okay, so those are just so people know.
And a zine stir that have published two zines.
So people know that's the Narcolepsy Network organization hosts these conferences every year. And if you haven't yet attended one, they are just such a wonderful event. And that's where I've got to meet Ming and so many other great people. And so definitely, if you haven't heard of them, Narcolepsy Network, get, you know, connected with them and the zines, two zines. Mm-hmm. So you're ahead of me because now you have two books. I only have one.
Well, the second one came out like a year later. So yeah.
I love it. You wrote this article. You were part of the first Rising Voices of Narcolepsy meeting. The first summer that we hosted the Rising Voices. So that was 2017, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
So that was now 3 years ago, I guess, that you wrote the essay.
Yeah.
Would you change anything or does it still feel pretty true to your experience?
It feels pretty true to my experience. I might have changed a couple paragraphs here and there and better placement, but I think what I've stated pretty much is how I feel. Yeah.
That's awesome. I just love the part about the mountain. I mean, you know, the bike trip, and that just puts a huge smile on my face. And oh my goodness. Okay. So you mentioned being a parent of a person with narcolepsy, which is, you know, a pretty unique experience. How has it been to be a parent in general? I'm always in awe of any parents I know with narcolepsy. So how has that experience been?
It has been very interesting. It's very stressful. My child, who is now a young adult, lives in California. We're in like the Bay Area, and I live in Las Vegas. We talk by phone like once a month, maybe a little bit less than once a month. But he often gets really sleepy and tired, and I kind of just am very patient with that, watching him fall asleep or nod off while he was in school. I was a very active dad while he was like in grade school and would accompany him to classes and stuff like that. And remember him fondly when he dressed up as an astronaut for like Halloween and things like that.
Yeah. And was it hard to balance being a parent and everything else you had to do in your life too? Or
then I was working as a nighttime nurse, and I barely remember a lot of the first like years just went by, because I would like come home from work, take care of the kids, go to sleep at my scheduled time, wake up, go to work. And it was a very grueling schedule. And I realized it wasn't sustainable to like work at like even a job that wouldn't give me health care, because I would need to work like more hours in order to qualify for health care. And so I had to actually go on disability because I couldn't work enough hours, because I couldn't get enough medication to work with my narcolepsy. So I felt like I was in a double bind. And so really, I missed that period of time raising my kids.
Wow. That sounds really challenging.
Yeah.
Can't believe you did all that too. I think the other thing that we had discussed in advance is that you did find some maybe Facebook groups too?
Yeah. My first scene talks a lot about a lot of the different Facebook groups that were out there that helped me with a lot of understanding of narcolepsy and the different perspectives that people had. I felt very strongly that it was one of the best resources I was able to find. I mean, it was also great meeting people at the narcolepsy conference, meeting them in person. And I even traveled out to Wyoming to help one person who had narcolepsy for about a month during February. That was a very exciting experience when I was like using the registered nurse ability that I had to like help that person with some healthcare issues. But I felt like the Facebook groups were really very, very enlightening.
That's good. And there are so many. I think, you know, just so people know that those exist, I don't even know how many there are at this point. It could be up to 100. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Narcolepsy related, but you were saying there are some that are specific, like parents of people with narcolepsy or parents with narcolepsy, right?
We have kids with narcolepsy. I'm like the admin for that group. And a lot of them are private groups, have like, you know, like a couple dozen people in it, or maybe even up to 100 people. And then other groups form and have like 1,000 people in it, or whatever the upper limit for narcolepsy and for Facebook groups are. There's a lot of different people who like read and can experience other people's journey through narcolepsy. So I find it a very useful resource.
Yes. I think that's a really good point. So you mentioned about your RN experience a little bit. I mean, being on a night shift, I just can't imagine. You're retired now, but...
I'm retired, but I still do a lot of nursing kinds of stuff currently.
Tell us about that.
So there's a Las Vegas street medic group, and I'm like the coordinator of that, and I can help teach people how to do healthcare for like protests. We're having a major training happening the July 1st, 2nd, and 3rd of this month via Zoom, where it's like 3 hours per day teaching about how to like situational awareness and the buddy system and how to render care to people between the time they might get injured and the time that emergency medical services might get to them, you know, during a protest or doing healthcare for people who are homeless or having some emotional crisis, having an extreme state. So I find that the, even though I'm not working for pay as an RN, I'm doing a lot of like community service type registered nurse stuff.
That is so cool and so important. So thank you for doing that.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's awesome. How did you find out about the Rising Voices program?
I found out through you.
Okay.
The sleepwalk.
Oh, yeah, that's right. And
I did one around the Capitol building of California, and you were doing one in Washington, D.C. at the time.
Coast to coast. That's so cool. And then I remember meeting you at the conferences. And then fun fact for everyone that doesn't know this, what was it? I don't know, maybe 5 or 6 years ago, we also did a Halloween pumpkin patch of like sleepy pumpkin or, you know, sleep themed pumpkins. So I remember you submitted pumpkins for the pumpkin patch as well.
Right. Yeah. A photo of the pumpkin that I grew and had with a little Sharpie, little face of sleepiness on it and stuff.
Yeah.
And a little pillow and a little blanket.
It's so cute. Yeah.
Are you facing sleep issues or a sleep disorder? Project Sleep is now excited to have the Sleep Helpline, a nonprofit-led free national helpline providing personalized support and resources. You can reach out today to speak with a compassionate resource specialist who will listen and help provide accurate sleep disorders information, resources to help navigate daily living and the healthcare landscape, and connect you with a certified sleep center and patient support organizations. Contact the Sleep Helpline at 1-800-819-2043 or by filling out a form on our website at project-sleep.com.
All right, so let's go ahead and get to people's questions. Nikki wants to know, what do you wish that people who don't have narcolepsy and don't know someone with it, how can they help people that have narcolepsy?
Public education is really interesting, is I think a really interesting aspect. So knowing that there are people who have like many different kinds of disabilities, abilities, varied abilities, I think that's really important. Knowing that medicine doesn't have like all the answers, but that they try in their way to provide care. And to know that, you know, just because a doctor says something doesn't necessarily mean that's the safest thing that you can do, but that it's, you know, that they're trying their best, I think is oftentimes what's happening. But they also are like have many different like resources that maybe are not in your personal best interest, but they're trying. I think that's an important aspect to, you know.
I think that you said beautifully, like, I mean, it's just by us sharing our stories that so many people have different varying degrees of abilities or disability and, you know, just making sure people know that we're out there giving appreciation for everyone's journey. So,
and that we're not alone.
Yes. Gina asks, would you like to share a bit about the Street Medics group that you're a part of? I think that, well, do you want to share any more about it?
People who want to become a street medic go through a 20-hour training pre-COVID time, but because of COVID, we're having it reduced down to a website learning, a first aid, and then this 9-hour Zoom that's happening first, second, and third of July. And then they have to go out to two different events with like an experienced street medic to basically learn how to render care. I mean, most of the time it like protests or events or stuff like that, people like have a need for water, sunscreen, maybe some like for like Las Vegas, some sort of protection from the sun. So it's really basically just a lot of basic healthcare, maybe a couple bandages, maybe some dust in the eye, but then things can also get like very, and protests, like the people can find themselves in a lot of different situations in confrontation. And so having situational awareness of where you're at and how to best protect yourself, how to render care to people who have been injured by, you know, a multitude of different things that can happen at a protest. Yeah, I think it's a very useful skill set. It's a very useful skill set to keep both yourself safe and to keep other people that you know, other people you don't know safe. We have a web email address of Las Vegas Street Medics, plural, at Gmail, and you can be in on the training. It's free. We do like healthcare for people who are homeless or people who are in extreme emotional states to de-escalate, to prevent people from like, you know, we received a small grant of money from a person who is an artist because of a person named Tashi Brown, who was like inebriated, I believe, went to like a cop at one of the hotels and the police turned out to kill this person. because this person was in an extreme state and they had someone who could de-escalate the situation, I think it would have ended in a much more reasonable outcome for both people, the police officer and Tashi Brown. So de-escalation is something that's definitely needed, because when you're having like an extreme state, calling somebody with a gun is usually just not really that great. And if you can like have community help and involvement, I think that works much better than having to put all this pressure on police to, you know, react to every situation that's out there.
It's amazing. Is that a national group, or is it just something happening in Las Vegas? Or
it happens in many different cities where people come together and they say, we need to do healthcare and we can't rely on the state to like provide everything. So we're going to take it in our own hands and try to do the best we can under Good Samaritan laws and stuff to provide healthcare, provide help and aid to people who need it.
Yeah.
Wait for the state to do it.
Well, thank you for doing it. I feel like I'm continuing to thank Ming for his work. I know I'm doing it on behalf of other people on the Zoom, I mean, on the Facebook Live. Okay, so we have a question from Iris, who wants to know if your symptoms have changed over the years.
So yeah, they've changed. I used to get, my nightmares used to get really bad. And so I started taking a medication called Prazosin, which is an alpha blocker. And so it helps reduce down the stimulants, the side effect of the stimulants keeping me very amped up at night, even though the stimulant itself has worn off, it has a side effect of increasing my heart rate and stuff. So taking that particular medication has helped reduce down my nightmares, which has helped me get better sleep. I still currently like sleep kind of fragmented, like I'll wake up every 2 to 3 hours, and I would like prefer to get like a more consolidated sleep, which is why my sleep doctor had suggested I get 6 hours of consolidated sleep. So that way I have more, instead of taking a nap during the daytime, if I can avoid it, I can like be more tired and sleep consolidatedly at night. And it's been fair to successful.
Awesome. All right. Linda would like to know, do you have any lifestyle routines that help?
Do I have like any what?
Lifestyle routines like diet, meditating, or anything else that you've helped to find helpful?
Well, the permaculture came in really helpful for me because I was at this intentional community as a registered nurse there. And I was like using the permaculture concepts of energy conservation to know how to like, you know, if I was making a trip from the chicken coop and feeding the chickens one day, if I could like incorporate other things like keeping track of the garden that's down there and watering while I'm down there while feeding the chickens, or picking the blueberries and the blackberries that were in the chicken coop area, that was something I could stack functions. And it was also like something like one of the permaculture concepts is start small. So if I had a new project, I would start small instead of like, oh, I can do this and take on something that was overwhelming. There's a lot of different permaculture concepts that I found very useful. And that's the lifestyle change I found the most effective, was kind of like making my life more doable. Like currently I'm an office manager of an anti-nuclear nonprofit, and I volunteer my time here. So I get disability plus I volunteer as the office manager, because it's like the hours I work on my own and I don't have to be on a schedule, which helps. It makes it much more sustainable.
I think that's so neat. I mean, I never would have thought like anything about permaculture would have, you know, fed into you thinking about your narcolepsy and your energy expenditure. I think that's just magical, you know? It reminds me of a book I just recently read. I'm going to forget the name, something about habits. And it's some of the similar concepts about stacking things together. Did that. And then, another one of the concepts you just brought up. Any way that we can get to those really great, you know, lessons learned is really wonderful. Yeah. Maybe eventually I'll figure out what that book was and share that. I listened to the audio book because I also find I can't really read very well. So I'm a big audio book person, but that's just so cool. So thank you for sharing that.
Thank you.
So we had a question, if you would like to speak about peace work. This is from Laura Marie, wants to know if you'd like to speak about peace work and working as a nurse for the Sacred Peace Walk.
So the Nevada Desert Experience has a we protest the Nevada test site, and the Nevada test site is a vast area that's in Nevada that they test nuclear weapons at. They used to. Now they do subcritical nuclear tests where they bring a nuclear explosion almost to criticality, but not bring it to the full criticality. So it doesn't actually explode, but it does like produce nuclear waste. It like makes it so they can do computer programming from that part outward to find out what would happen. Like they're testing nuclear warheads to make sure that they still maintain their effectiveness, theoretical effectiveness, after all this long period of time, because no one has ever built a nuclear warhead that has lasted as long as they have now. So because we only have limited ways of protesting a nuclear test site, we have a peace walk, a sacred peace walk, that goes from the Atomic Testing Museum that's in Las Vegas down near the Strip to the atomic test site, 65 miles over a period of 6 days. And people get very enthusiastic. They become more knowledgeable at the test site. They become aware that the test site's not a relic of the Cold War, that it's not a dead site, that they still do nuclear testing. Like our resources to find out what's going on the test site have been somewhat limited because they used to be much more forthcoming with like what they do there, but now they're a little more secretive. So we think that they're doing this nuclear testing, subcritical nuclear tests, like every other Thursday. They tell us that they're doing these tests to run these computer programs to find out what happens to the plutonium that's in the warheads. So we do a sacred peace walk that goes out there that's interfaith. We also do an event in the fall that is around Hiroshima Nagasaki Day, or used to be around Hiroshima Nagasaki. It was a little too hot here in Las Vegas, so we moved it back a little bit so it'd be cooler temperature-wise. But those are our two main events we do.
And weren't you telling me before, I believe that was it on one of the sacred walks that you started to realize this connection between your RN or your registered nurse experience too and some of this work?
Yes. I was, one of the last nursing type things I did was doing healthcare for like large peace walks, which is why I was doing the sleepwalk with that you had like organized on the East Coast and I did on the West Coast, was because I had experience doing large walks with people, doing healthcare for large walks with people. I was the crew captain for like the breast cancer 3-day kind of things and stuff like that. And so that activism, which is what this whole like show is about, is how I became active, was when I came to Nevada and saw they didn't have any healthcare for their peace walk. I said, hey, that's somewhere I can like fit in and like help with the blister care and stuff like that. And so that's how I got activated.
That's so cool.
More active.
And so important. I did just look up the book I was mentioning, and it is Atomic Habits, which is interesting. But that is the book that I was talking about that mentioned some of the same concepts that you had talked about and how to build better habits. Ming, it's been such a pleasure to talk to you today. Is there anything else that you'd like to share before we tune out?
I want to share a thank you to Laura Marie because she's the one who inspired me to make a zine.
Oh, awesome. Yay, yes. To Laura Marie. Big thank you. Yes. And for taking your photo, if I recall. Yes. Right? I love that photo with the sunflower. So. And hopefully people can check out the two zines that you have out. And we're just really grateful for everyone that joins us to talk about stories. I think it's just so important right now more than ever. So,
The zine is called With Intention. It's free to anybody with narcolepsy.
So stay well, everyone. Thank you again, Ming.
Thank you.
The Project Sleep Podcast is produced by Carver Sound Productions. For more information on podcast production services, visit carversoundproductions.com.